Chapter 3. By the time they let me visit my father again, the Coral Queen had been pumped dry, mopped clean, and refitted with new gambling equipment. I was hoping Dad wouldn't ask about it, but he did. "No way!" he exclaimed when I told him what Dusty at Muleman was back in action. "They must have had 20 guys working on that boat," I said. My father was crushed. "I should have taken it out and sunk it in Hawk's Channel," he muttered, "or the Gulf Stream." Luckily, we were alone in the interview room. I assumed that my father had convinced the big jowly deputy, and probably everyone else at the jail, that he was harmless and fairly normal. He was good at that. "Mom heard you might get transferred to the stockade in Key West," I said. "Not anymore," Dad reported in a confidential tone. "The lieutenant here likes me. I'm teaching him how to play chess."
"You play chess?"
"Shh," my father said. "He thinks I do. Anyway, hey, how's Abby?" "All right," I said. "Tell her to hang in there, Noah. She says you need professional help." Dad sat back and chortled. "That's our girl. Did you go see Lice Peking?" I described my visit to the trailer park. My father wasn't surprised that Lice turned down the old truck and wanted money in exchange for providing evidence against Dusty Muleman. "Dad, how are we going to pay him when we're flat broke?" "Excellent question," my father said. "See if Lice will take my bonefish skiff. It's worth 10 or 12 grand at least." Secretly, I've been hoping that one day Dad would give me that boat. It was an original Hell's Bay with a 60-horse Merc, a really sweet ride. Sometimes, late in the afternoon, my father would take me and Abby out fishing. Even if the snappers weren't biting, we'd stay out until sunset, hoping to see the green flash on the horizon. The flash was kind of a legend in the Keys. Some people believed in it, and some didn't. Dad claimed that he actually witnessed it once on a cruise to Fort Jefferson. For our fishing expeditions, either Abby or I always brought a camera, just in case. We had a stack of pretty sunset pictures, but no green flash. "You sure you want to give away the skiff?" I asked. "What the heck? It's the best we can do," Dad said. "I guess so." I tried not to sound too bummed. "Hey, did you meet the famous Shelley?" "Yeah, she's kind of scary," I said. "Lice said he stole her from Dusty. What did he mean, exactly?" I figured it was one of those "I'll explain it when you're older" questions that my dad would brush off, but he didn't. "Shelley was Dusty's second or third wife, after Jasper Jr.'s mother," he said. Then he paused. "Actually, maybe they were only engaged to be married. Anyway, one day she got fed up with Dusty and moved in with Lice." I wondered how miserable life with the Mulemans must have been to make Lice Peking look like a prize. "Dad, when are you coming home?" I asked. "After the trial," he replied. The plan was to use his big day in court to expose Dusty Muleman's illegal polluting. "But Mom says you can bail out and come home and still have your trial later," I said. "No, I need to stay here and show I'm totally committed to the cause. You know how many jails around the world are full of people who spoke up for what they believed in and lost their freedom? Lost everything they had? Look at Nelson Mandela," my father said. "He spent 27 years in a South African prison." "27 years, Noah! A couple of weeks won't hurt me." "But Mom misses you," I said. That seemed to catch him off guard and take the steam out of his big speech. Dad looked away. "It's a sacrifice, I know," he said. "I wish it didn't have to be like this." I didn't say anything about Mom and the plague suitcase because she'd put it away. That morning, I'd peeked in their bedroom closet. Her clothes were still hanging there. So were Dad's. When I stood up to leave, my father perked up slightly. He said, "Oh, I almost forgot. A reporter from the Island Examiner might drop by the house. It's all right for you to speak with him." "About what?" I asked. "My situation." "Oh, sure, Dad." His situation, I thought. Sometimes it's like my father lives on his own weird little planet. In July, the days get long and stream together. I try not to look at the calendar because I don't want to think about time passing. August comes way too soon, and that's when school starts in Florida. Summer mornings are mostly sunny and still, though by mid-afternoon, huge boiling thunderheads start to build over the Everglades, and the weather can get interesting in a hurry. I've always liked watching the sky drop down like a foamy purple curtain when a summer storm rumbles across Florida Bay. If you're on the ocean side of the islands, it can sneak up on you from behind, which happens a lot to tourists. That's where we were going, to Thunder Beach, when a squall rolled through after lunch. Tom, Rado, and I hunkered in the mangroves and held out our skateboards over our heads to keep the raindrops out of our eyes. It took like half an hour for the leading edge of the storm to pass. Then the wind dropped out, and the only sound was a soft, sleepy drizzle. We crawled from the tree line and brushed the leaves off our arms. Not surprisingly, the lightning had spooked everyone away from the park except us. Before heading to the water, we scanned the shoreline for pollution warnings. Whenever the biologists from the health department find too much bacteria, they post danger signs up and down Thunder Beach. No swimming, no fishing, no anything. Only a certified moron would dive in when the beach was posted. I was glad to see that the water was okay, especially when a big loggerhead turtle bobbed up to the surface. The three of us stayed real quiet because we thought the turtle might be coming ashore to lay her eggs, although usually they waited until dark. Loggerheads have lousy eyesight, so we were pretty sure she didn't notice us sitting there, but she didn't swim any closer. We wouldn't have bothered her if she decided to crawl up and dig a nest. Most of the keys are made of hard coral rock, and there isn't many soft beaches like you find up the coast at Pompano or Vero. The mama turtles down here don't have lots of options, so we leave them alone. It's the law, too. After the loggerhead swam off, we jumped in and goofed around until Tom cut his ankle on a broken beer bottle that was buried in the sand. Rado and I helped him hop back to shore, where we tied his dolphin's jersey around his foot to keep the cut from getting dirty. Rado took him home while I skated alone down the old road back toward Lice Peaking's place. Nobody answered the door, and I was already down the steps when Shelley appeared from behind the trailer and nearly scared the you-know-what out of me. She was barefooted and carried a long, rusty shovel. "What do you want now?" she asked. She wore cut-off jeans and a sleeveless top that showed off her barbed wire tattoo. "I need to talk to Mr. Peaking again," I said. "Well, he's not available at the moment." "That's okay. I'll come back another time." Shelley noticed me staring at the shovel. She laughed and said, "Don't worry. It wasn't lice I was putting in a hole. It was last night's dinner." I nodded as if that was the most normal thing in the world, burying food in your backyard. "Lobster shells," she explained. "I don't want them stinking up the garbage because they're out of season." Next thing you know, some nosy neighbor calls the grouper troopers and then, "Houston, we've got a problem." Some of the locals in the Keys poach a lobster here and there in the off months. Not even my dad gets upset about that. "What you want to talk to lice for?" Shelley asked. "Just some business between him and my father," I said. She was so much taller than me, I had to tilt my head back just to see her expression. She was smiling when she said, "Important business, huh?" "Yes, ma'am." "Come on inside and have something to drink." "No, thanks. I'm soaking wet." "So's lice," Shelley grunted, "but from the inside out." She jerked open the screen door and I followed her into the trailer. Lice Peaking was stretched face down on the blue shag carpet and he wasn't moving. I didn't see any blood, which was a relief, but I couldn't hear him breathing. Shelley said, "Oh, don't worry, he's not dead." She gave a sharp kick to his ribs and he started to snore. "See?" she said. "Tell me your name again." "Noah Underwood." "You're Payne's oldest?" "That's right," I said. Shelley tossed me a Coke from the refrigerator and said, "Your daddy's a curious specimen." Somehow it sounded like a compliment. I guzzled the soda in about 30 seconds while I edged towards the door. The perfume that Shelley had on was making me dizzy. It smelled like a bag of tangerines. She sat down on a cane stool and motioned to me to do the same, but I stayed on my feet. I wasn't sure what would happen if Lice Peaking woke up, and I wanted to be ready to run. Shelley said, "I've known Payne since back when he and Dusty used to fish charters out of Ted's. He was always a gentleman. Your daddy, I mean, not Dusty." "Yes, ma'am." "How come you're acting so skittery, Noah?" I couldn't come out and tell her that she was the reason, that everything about her, from her face to her feet, was at least twice as big as my mother's. So I said, "I'm going to be late for violin practice." which was incredibly lame because we don't even own a violin. Abby takes piano lessons on a portable electric keyboard that my father bought from a consignment shop in Key Largo. Now, Noah, Shelley said, that's not the truth, is it?
No, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Please don't grow up to be one of those men who lie for the sport of it, she said.
And most men do. That's a fact.
As Shelley spoke, she was staring down at Lice Peaking, and not in an admiring way.
That's why the world is so messed up, Noah. That's why history books are full of so much heartache and tragedy. Politicians, dictators, king, phony baloney preachers, most of them are men.
And most of them lie like rugs, she said. Don't you dare grow up to be any of that.
To be like that. At first, I thought she was making fun of me, but then I realized she was serious.
Your daddy doesn't drink, does he? She said.
That's truly amazing.
It was sort of unusual for the Keys. People who didn't know my father automatically assumed he had to be drunk to do some of the things he did, but he wasn't. He never touched a drop of alcohol, even on New Year's. It wasn't a religious thing. He just didn't care for the taste.
Why can't I find a guy like that? Shelley said in a small voice. I couldn't help but notice that she was using Lice Peking's head as a footrest. It didn't seem to bother him, though. He kept snoring away.
You go to the public school, she said? Then you must know Jasper Jr.
Sure, I said.
Is that boy still nasty as a pygmy rattler?
Nastier, I answered honestly.
Shelley shook her head.
He's been that way since he was about 3 foot high. Honestly, I don't see a bright future there.
Her mentioning Jasper Jr. reminded me of what my dad said about Shelley and Dusty Mealman, about how she'd gotten so fed up with him that she moved out. I decided to find out if she still felt that way.
Didn't you used to work on the Coral Queen, I asked?
For almost 3 years, said Shelley. Was it a fun job? She rolled her eyes. Tending bar? Oh, yeah, it was a barrel of laughs. Very glamorous, too.
Come on now, what are you driving at?
Nothing, I swear.
There you go again, Noah.
Shelley was sharp when it came to sniffing out fibs, so I just came out and asked her. Did you ever hear about anything crooked going on with that boat?
Crooked how? She asked.
Like dumping sewer water into the basin. She laughed in a way that sounded hard and bitter.
Sweetie, she said, the only sewage I ever saw was the human kind. That's what you call the downside of my job.
Oh.
This has something to do with your old man, doesn't it? About him sinking Dusty's boat?
Maybe. It sounded silly as soon as I said it.
Maybe almost always means yes.
Okay, let's hear the whole story.
Shelley cocked her head and cupped one of her ears, which had like 5 silver rings on it.
Come on, Noah, she said. I'm listening.
There was no way I wasn't going to cave in and blab everything. She was a pro at shaking the truth out of guys who were a lot bigger and tougher than I was. But then, Lice Peaking came to the rescue. He stopped snoring, flopped over on his back, and opened one bleary red eye. Shelley thumped him with both heels and said, Get up, you sorry sack of beans, before I park that slimy aquarium on your head.
I didn't wait around to see if she was serious.